Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome again to For Your Benefit. We're here with two co-hosts, Tammy Flanagan and Bob Lines. Tammy Flanagan, I'm sure, needs no introduction, but just in case you did, GovExec columnist, senior benefit director, NITP, seminar presenter. What else do you do? Webinar presenter?
Already enough.
Okay, all right. Well, all right.
Hey, I'm here. That's the important thing because, boy, not traffic, but parking is really at a premium around this studio lately. But we got here and we made it on time, so.
Okay. Last week, we kind of had an open mic session and nobody used it based on the five preceding shows on financial literacy. And we thought we'd give it one more shot. And I think today will be good. But we do have a little script to follow at the beginning. And on our website, we talked about, let's take a look at the first one. What factors should you consider when deciding whether to start drawing Social Security or delay it for some future date? This would probably take the whole show.
We could do a whole show on that question because there are books written on that question. And it's basically the claiming strategies. You know, when should you claim your benefit? Anywhere from 62 to 70. Everybody has the same 8 years. And I'll tell you my quick response to that.
Okay.
There's three questions you ask yourself. Number one, are you still working? Because if you're still working, you probably don't need it. And if you're under your full retirement age, there's an earnings limit, so you probably couldn't take it anyway. So that's the first question. If you're not working, then you go to the second question. And the second question is, do you need the money? And the majority of Americans, when they retire, Social Security makes up more than half of their retirement income. So some people couldn't choose to delay it if they were going to retire. So for those employees or those retirees, there is no choice. You have to take it if you want to retire. But let's say you're not working and you're fortunate to not even need the money. You have other sources of income. You have your FERS or CSRS retirement. You might be able to take money from your TSP account. So let's say you can pay your bills without taking Social Security. Then we come to the third and final question, which is the hardest one and hopefully the one you can't answer. And that one is, how long are you going to live? So if you knew how long you were going to live, you'd know exactly when to take it because Social Security is designed on an actuarial basis. So that if we all die at 81, it wouldn't matter when you took it. Whether you took it at 62 or 70, we all would have got the same amount. But if you live to be 90, like the 60-minute special last night that was on the old, the 90-plus, that's the fastest-growing segment of our U.S. population, well, then you'd be glad you waited. But if you die at 64, you'll wish you would have taken it at 62, perhaps, but you wouldn't know the difference.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, because I know people are listening, and I think everybody here in the studio knows what full retirement age is. But if I retire, isn't that my full retirement age?
Yeah, it depends on what you're talking about, because with FERS and CSRS, we might be talking about a retirement age of 55 or maybe 56 in 6 months. So with the government pension plan, the full retirement age could be a lot younger. But with Social Security, back in the 80s, back in the Reagan administration, there was an increase. Congress made an increase to the Social Security age, and that's the full retirement age, which we used to think of as 65. But now that age is increasing to 67 based on your year of birth. So most people who are 66 right now, that is your full retirement age. If you're a little bit younger, your full retirement age is closer to 67, or it might be 67. But they never change the minimum retirement age for Social Security, which remains at 62. The problem is if you apply and you claim your Social Security when you're 62, you're going to take somewhere between a 25 to a 30% reduction, which is a permanent reduction for the rest of your life. And then we get back to what is the rest of your life, how long are you going to receive the benefit, whether or not it was worth taking it at a reduced amount but collect it longer versus taking it a higher amount but collecting it shorter, because you're going to die on the same date no matter when you took it.
Right. And I don't believe there's any calculator on the net that's, if you will, a public calculator to make this.
There is.
And does it really drill into if you take it and save it and the taxes? And
yeah, done by an economist. It's called Social Security Solutions. Have you heard of that one? And I don't know, maybe you don't agree, but I think he does take into account the taxes and the life expectancy and all the different factors. But it's still, nobody knows. It's like Las Vegas. It's a gamble because you don't know when you're going to die.
Right. And so I suppose you look at mothers, brothers, sisters and for that. But if the analytical types want to go to that, it doesn't answer the final question, but nobody's got the answer to that, healthy or otherwise.
But the question I have for you, because you're the tax guy and finance too, is if you took it late and then you took money out of your TSP account, which of course you're most likely going to have to pay tax on unless it's all in the Roth, which most people it isn't. So would that make sense to take a bigger distribution from your TSP account that's going to be fully taxable so that you can delay your Social Security to 70? Or would you be better off to leave your TSP account untouched? If you had the choice between the two, would you leave your TSP account untouched and then take Social Security early and then delay your TSP withdrawals?
I most likely would take the Social Security early. Why? It's very, very tax efficient. So it's at most 85% taxable at the federal.
So well, I won't say at most. 15% tax-free.
For most people, it's 15% tax-free. And for those same most people, whatever state they're in, they generally don't tax it at the state level. So, in fact, by taking less out, you get the same as if you took more out of a taxable TSP. TSP is, from 99.9% of the people, 100% taxable, unless it's the Roth TSP.
Right.
So I would be keeping more in the TSP and getting actually more from Social Security spendable because of the tax, Benny.
That makes sense. And then the other thing I was thinking about, too, is if you did die early, that your TSP is untouched, so that all goes to your beneficiary, where if you died early and you didn't take your Social Security, the only person who can get that is your spouse.
Right.
Or if you have young children, which most of us at 66 no longer have. But hopefully, well, some people do.
Some people do. Let's go to beneficiaries in a while, too, because we talked about this before the show went on air with regards to the TSP.
That could be another whole show.
Yeah. Andrew, you wave your arms when we get too close so we can do that. Andrew is our ever-efficient engineer, and I have to look at him, and Tammy has to look at him in a different window than normal.
I can't even see Andrew today.
Anyway, so let's come back to here. So the factors I think we hit on, we talked about a program for those of you that are analytical, and you should be in this case. Maybe not the full boat that this is going to give you, but you can't just say, well, I'll do this, and I'll save my TSP till later because I don't want to touch my TSP because I like it.
I think the important thing is you think about it rather than just knee-jerk apply for it without giving yourself a chance to explore your options.
Yeah, and the FERS folks, too, because there's a lot more money in there. Of course, the CSRS folks might not have a long-winded discussion as to taking money out of their Social Security.
They'd be happy to get any.
Yeah. All righty, so we hit that. When you delay your retirement in order to boost your high three, I hear this in class. Well, I want to work a little bit longer, so I'll get a higher high three.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I'm not so sure. So, Tammy, this is clearly on your side of the court. When you delay your retirement in order to boost your high three, what are the breakpoints of that, and how do they influence your cash flow?
Okay. Well, first of all, what is your high three? Because some people don't understand that your FERS and your CSRS retirement are based on a combination of multiplying your salary, which is your average of your highest 3 years of pay, which for most people is their final 3 years. So when we say high three, we're talking about the final 3 year average or any three consecutive years average salary that's the highest of your career. And then you multiply that by your length of service, whether it's 30 years and 9 months or 42 years or whatever your length of service is. And then you multiply that by either 1% for FERS or possibly 1.1% depending on your age. Or if you're CSRS, it's almost a 2% calculation, but it's a little more complicated. So when we talk about the high three, that's one of the factors. So, you know, you can increase your length of service at the same time you're increasing your high three. So it's like a double benefit of working longer. So every month that you add to the length of service, that's going to increase it by 1/12 of either 1 or 2%. But then every day that you work, you're replacing today's salary in 2014 from the salary that was in effect in 2011. Well, for many employees who are retiring today, especially those who are kind of maxed out in their pay grade, they're already a GS 13 step 10 or GS 9 step 10, their salary hasn't increased only by 1%. And that was just in January. Otherwise, there have been no general pay increases over the last 3 years besides this most recent one. So for today's employee, it doesn't make that much difference to their high three whether they retire today or 6 months from now, unless they had a big increase, unless they had a big promotion or a big jump in pay. And then for those employees, the easiest way to tell if it's important to you is to get two estimates. Ask your HR office, ask your benefits specialist in your human resource office to run you two retirement estimates. Say, run me one for the end of May, but then run me another one for the end of December so I can see what 6 more months would do to both my length of service, my high three. And keep in mind, during that time, I can still add to my thrift. If I'm FERS, I'm still earning Social Security and delaying my Social Security. So there's a lot of things that are impacted by delaying your retirement. But then you have to hold that up against the fact that you want to have a retirement. So, what do you want to do? What is lined up for you to spend your time? So if there's a second career waiting, that's a lot different than not knowing what you're going to do. So there's so many different moving parts to deciding when's the best time to retire, both mentally as well as financially. And then you get down to picking the date after that.
Let me ask you this. Just popped into my head. Let's say somebody retires and they had a career and they had earned an annuity. And after a while, they find retirement is not to their liking and they were able to come back to federal service. Mm-hmm. And let's say that they were CSRS before. If they come back, are they then FERS?
Well, it depends on how they come back, because the government now has a variety of ways to rehire federal retirees. In many cases, a federal retiree will go out and work for a government contractor and be hired by the contractor to do sometimes the same work they were doing as a federal employee. And in that case, there's no conflict, but you're not earning any additional retirement benefit. Some employees, like you said, might say, well, I just retired too soon. I'm going to go back and see if I can get rehired in my same job. And in that case, you are coming back as a re-employed annuitant. So for the traditional re-employed annuitant, when you just get rehired back by your agency, in most cases, you come back and your new salary gets reduced by the amount of your retirement. And you would have to work at least a year to accrue a supplemental benefit based on that additional time. If you work 5 more years, if you come back and really stay for 5 more years, then you can have the whole thing recomputed as if you were retiring for the first time. But in recent years, there have become a real need for the government to bring back the experience of the retirees. So they've created this law, Congress created this law called a dual compensation waiver, so that you could come back as a re-employed annuitant, but there would be no offset to your salary. But you also would not be accruing any additional retirement benefits. You'd almost be as if you were working for a contractor, but you'd be on a limited appointment. You could only work a specific number of years or months. You'd have to spend a portion of your time mentoring younger employees. You'd have to spend a portion of your time working on the project that you didn't finish before you left. So there are some rules related to that re-employed annuitant. So you have to give that some thought. And then, of course, we have the new thing that's coming this year, hopefully this year, is for employees who haven't retired but are eligible, they can move into phased retirement. And so that's being ironed out with the details at OPM. Hopefully will be introduced to the agencies later on this year.
That's a whole show unto itself, mm-hmm. and it's only guessing at this point.
Mm-hmm. Once that comes out, I'm sure we'll do a show just on that topic, because that's a real interesting concept.
Okay. One of the questions we had on the website that we wanted to touch on, maybe I'm talking to myself here, but you're a mm-hmm. closet tax financial type or financial tax type.
It's all anyway, related. Yeah,
it's all related. Mm-hmm. So what's the impact of the decision above on your income taxes? What we're talking about above is taking Social Security or taking the thrift. And I find in class, and I put this up on the board, I put the first tax bracket, the second tax bracket, and I draw lines in between. And there's a misconception among many. It's not just at the federal level. It's in private industry as well. If somebody goes from one bracket to the next, they feel that all their income prior to that change is taxed at the new higher level. but it's really only the next dollar that gets. It's like filling up buckets with water. So any spillage gets taxed at the higher rate until that bucket gets filled up, and then as it spills into the next, and that. So it's kind of like walking upstairs. It isn't that they throw you back down the stairs.
Right.
But the tax rates, the first rates are, I mean, they're abnormally low that I don't know that anybody listening is ever going to be in the first tax bracket of 10%. It's not going to happen. And I'm not so sure they'll stay at the second bracket either, which is 15%. So they're probably going to be high into the 15s at a minimum.
But doesn't everybody get some of their income tax at that level?
Oh, yeah. There's
like
a piece.
First 10,000 or whatever.
Right.
And you
so
move
it's
on.
Like okay. Walking up the stairs. The first stair, mm-hmm. It was light. But any
so
additional
dollar. So we all get
dollar,
the same break on that until we move to the next step.
Right. Okay. But any additional dollar that you bring in through taking money out of the thrift or even Social Security with this tax-favored status is going to be taxed at that highest level,
right?
And may or may not be taxed at the state level. Not every state has a state tax return. Not every state taxes the annuity. Not every state taxes the thrift. Even there's a very few, but and then there's the states that don't tax anything. Of course,
no state income tax.
Those are great, and people say, you know, what's the best state to retire in? I mean, to me, it's hands down, it's Alaska. But retirees might not like the climate. Beautiful country, but nonetheless, they don't have a state income tax. They don't have a sales tax.
And yeah, hard to find a dentist.
yeah. And they pay you to live there. So yeah. What's not to like? But people say, Florida, Texas, Washington mm-hmm. State. Okay. But they're looking at it from the wrong reason. It's everything can't be taxes. A mm-hmm. state's got to make the money someplace. Alaska makes it on oil, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Florida and Texas. I don't want to go through every one of those states, but they have to make it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So around here, not that everybody's around here, there's a large percentage of feds now right at the Pennsylvania border on the Pennsylvania side. Pennsylvania doesn't tax the annuity. It doesn't tax the thrift. But depending on the county you live in, and you're from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. They'll make up for it with the real estate taxes.
Right. And the sales taxes, too. They have a high sales tax there.
Yeah.
Plus, they have these little locality taxes. I was up in Philadelphia last week doing a class, and the employees have another deduction out of their paycheck. It's like a local city tax that they pay on top of the state tax. But they were asking me if they have to pay that on their retirement, and I didn't know. Do you know?
No.
Okay, good. If you're listening from Philadelphia, you got your answer.
It's called a Philadelphia wage tax, and it's roughly 1% of what they make.
It's strictly wages.
Yeah, and they're very proactive in policing it. I have a client that has a business, and one of their employees keeps a Philadelphia address, but they don't work anywhere near Philly. And every year, Philadelphia says, where's my Philadelphia wage
tax? So even if they don't have it withheld, they still have to pay it.
Well, we don't pay it. We explain why. It's just
they're not working.
It's their home address, if you will, for all mail because they're not always in the same location. And it makes sense, but they're not really residents of. So, Tammy, you bring up a good point. These local states aren't the only ones that have things like that. There are other counties and there are other states in the country that do. And everybody seems to have a different set of rules depending on their job description. For example, foreign service officers. Some states, California, known as a high tax state, but if you leave California to become a foreign service officer, you don't have to pay taxes on your State Department wages while you're a foreign service officer.
That's crazy.
Nobody should mishear that. That's a foreign service officer. That's not somebody that works for the State Department mm-hmm. or Department of State. And other states like that have military, you know, military
exemptions,
exemptions while they're on service. And
but even Social Security provides some military folks some extra wage credit for the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
So you should check that out on socialsecurity.gov to see if you qualify to get those extra credits. It's not a huge amount. Doesn't change your benefit too much. But, hey, I'll take anything that gives me an increase if I already did the work.
And I think the thrift has a provision for people in the military, but not just anybody in the military, that if they put money into the thrift, it's not fully taxable when it comes back out. I'm not so sure it's fully
deductible.
It depends
on where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
Because some of it's like when they're overseas and they're in a combat zone.
Exactly.
They can get some extra money that goes in totally tax-free and comes out tax-free.
Yeah. And when you talk about that in class, it's not many, but you choose your subject. So if we're talking to a military group, it's going to have more application than a non-military group.
Right.
But anyway, okay. So we got into taxes, and are there any computer programs or apps available that help with these calculations? Now, we talked about three different things, and you mentioned, what was that site again for the really analytical folks?
I found it actually. It's called SocialSecuritySolutions.com, and it's endorsed by Kiplinger's, you know, the personal financial people. So it's a site that's set up by an economist, and I forget who the other guy is, but they've written a book called Social Security Strategies, which I found kind of interesting because it goes through like couple strategies and single people strategies and even government employee strategies. So it's interesting for those people who want to dig deeper into claiming your Social Security and trying to weigh the pros and cons against taking it early versus waiting later. But it'll take you a Saturday afternoon.
Well, that one's good too. And there's for those that just want to try to get a checkup on where they are, and this could be beginning career, mid career, pre retirement. And there's one just for feds. It's called the Federal Ballpark Estimate. Now, mm-hmm. that's exactly what it is. It's a ballpark. It's not going to cover everything, but it's a great kind of warning light to say, uh-oh, you need to be saving more money, or, oh, congratulations, you've done a good job. And they ask you things like, how much do you spend, or how much do you want to replace of your income, which I'm not so sure everybody understands that. It's how much do you really spend?
Yeah.
And that's key to anything that we've talked about, that we'll talk about today and we'll talk about tomorrow. Unless you know what you spend, you can sit around all day and say, gee, my thrift is worth X and my annuity is worth Y. I'm ready for retirement. Well, are you going to be spending more than X and Y?
Yeah. It takes out the part that you have to really do your homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody can't live on those same averages.
Right. Or how much do you have to cut back? I mean, if you're close, and everybody can cut back some, but if you're not real close, some people can cut back a lot.
Right. Not everybody spent their entire career in federal service. So some people have a military retirement. They got a civilian retirement. They might even have a private sector pension or a 401k. So you really have to look at everything rather than just your federal career, especially if that hasn't been your full career. So it gets a little complicated.
We started, I think, the first financial literacy show, and we just drilled into the thrift. Every different fund that was there, what makes them attractive. I'm not going to say what makes them good and what makes them bad. Then we had a gentleman from Social Security drilled into Social Security. Then we had financial literacy with two Schaefers, Karen Schaefer, a financial planner, and her daughter, Megan, who is an attorney. And she's young, and you know, usually young people don't say, well, I don't need a will, I don't need this and that. And she made a good point, not because she's an attorney, but she's young and she understands it, I'm sure, more so now than what she did before she became attorney. And it was really an enlightening show for somebody new, mid, or even pre-retirement.
And those are all archived.
Yep. Okay. If money comes out of my TSP, it comes out proportionally based on where it's invested. Mm-hmm. And the emailer was saying, well, I don't really have much control. I don't want to necessarily have it taken out of the XYZ fund, but it's coming out regardless, where when I put the money in, I can control where it goes. Mm-hmm. And the point's well taken, and the heart of the comment was, here's what I got. How do I get around it? Can I change my withdrawal options every month? No. Well, you can. You can change the dollar amount every month under the monthly payment where mm-hmm. you set the dollar amount paid. And you set it in December for the rest of the year, and then I guess you could juggle the funds around. But that gets laborious. And if you need X dollars and you've made the election to take X dollars out and it can't all come out of the funds you want, that's not so good. Could you transfer some to an IRA and you'd have more flexibility? Yes. Notice I said transfer. Don't roll it over. I won't say it's ugly. There was a Supreme Court deal that said you only get one rollover a year.
Yeah, but if you only have one IRA and one TSP, it's no big deal. But if you had three IRAs, then it can get a little bit tricky.
Okay, but listeners, please remember the term. Rollover is you take possession of the money and you take it somewhere. There are some things called a direct rollover. That's not what they were attacking. Mm-hmm. The transfer term or the direct rollover, you don't touch it. You tell TSP, IRA, move IRA A to IRA B. I don't want to get near it.
Yeah, there's a page on the TSP withdrawal application that when you indicate that you want to take some of your money and move it to an IRA, you can list the IRA management and the phone number and the address, and the money goes directly there. So there's no need for you to take it and then send it to the IRA. It's, you can do a direct transfer and avoid all these problems with that Supreme Court decision.
Okay. So we'll go back to our emailer, and I just thought maybe this could help in this case. I think this is not commonly known, that once you leave federal service, you can still add money to your TSP. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're working for the XYZ company and they have a 401k plan, you can put that money in there each pay period. You might be able to later on, but you can't put it in each pay period. But if you have an IRA, it's only the fully taxable portion of the IRA, you can transfer that into the TSP any day you want. And the only deadline is your last day on earth. So you could be years into retirement, you could be days into retirement, and you could transfer a chunk of money into the TSP. Now, once it's in the TSP, it allows you to do those investments. But as the emailer this morning, there was an issue with regards to the monthly distributions. That may aid the question if I could get enough money in there and I could leave it more in the safe environment, if you will, the safer the environment, the G fund. Not saying you should do that, the G fund, and to some degree the F fund. I'm not so sure the F fund should ever be looked at as safe as the G.
No, but it kind of balances the risk for a lot of people of the stock funds, I think, is where they use it. But again, it's not necessarily a big part of their investment. Yeah, just to reiterate what this guy was saying, because I think a lot of people don't know this, like he gave the example that if he's allocated in his TSP account, he used the example, what if I'm 60% of my money's in C fund, 20% of it's in S, 10% I have in F, 5% in G, and 5% in I. So he's got his account all distributed between the five different options. So when he makes his $3,000 a month withdrawal, he can't tell the TSP that he wants it all to come from G fund. The TSP is going to take that $3,000, 60% from his C fund, 20% from S, 10% from F, and 5% from G and I. So he has no control over how that money's distributed, and that's his beef. He says, why is it that I can control where it goes, but I can't control which fund I take it out of? And we were discussing that. We thought it was just financially more efficient not to let people choose which fund to take their withdrawals from. But perhaps that'll change in the future as the TSP becomes more adept at making those kind of changes without adding cost to the program.
Yeah, we haven't had the TSP folks on in a while. We'll have to give a call and see if we can get them in the next.
That's right. We got a lot of TSP questions that are based on future possible changes that maybe they have some insight. Maybe they're already working on. We don't know.
Okay. One other thought with this email. I thought the question was great and kind of left me looking like, well, we're in a box. But if we could take money out of the TSP, have a one-time partial distribution general rule, and park it over into the IRA, and then whatever was left, if you left it somewhat in the G fund, not for life, but and then I know what I'm getting, and I'll exhaust the money within a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that would fit his profile.
Well, I was looking at a survey that TSP did in 2008, and they were asking federal employees and retiree and separated employees what they plan to do with their TSP. And I was surprised that about over half the people plan to just leave it in the thrift plan and not touch it. And that's kind of encouraging because that means that employees feel that their government pension, whether it's civil service or FERS and Social Security, those monthly incomes that they have must be covering their expenses without really needing the TSP. Or maybe they have saved other money in IRAs or other money in the bank that they're using. So I think a lot of people are saving their TSP for their last money that they're going to start to use in their retirement years.
They're very comfortable with the TSP. And sometimes I think wrongly so. There's nothing wrong with the TSP. But in class, they say, well, I don't pay any fees. And I go, well, you do. It's very low, mm-hmm. but you do. And they go, no, I don't. I go, well, just look at.
Well, it's 27 cents per thousand per year. It's very minimal.
It's teeny. Yeah, very minimal. And if that was the only reason that they're doing it, again, they're not going to find it that low anywhere else, but they'll find choices greater elsewhere. I'm saying nothing negative about the TSP. Mm-hmm. It's just you need to be aware of that. Okay, we've got another comment here. It's regarding IRA distributions from an inherited IRA. So somebody passes and they name somebody to be the beneficiary of their IRA. And the comment is, if you're under age 59 and a half and you inherit an IRA, there may be a downside to making the election to leave it and to put it in your IRA. Why? Because there's a 10% penalty that applies to people before age 59 and a half, but not with regards to an inherited IRA. So if somebody takes the entire amount and they inherit it, they're under 59 and a half, they take money out on a monthly distribution based on their life expectancy, there is no penalty. But this doesn't apply, and it doesn't have to be all or none. If you determine that you may need a part of it, and some of it you'll need before reaching 59 and a half, and some of it you don't, just watch out where you place it, because you can split it. And there's, I think, a common misconception that it's all or none that goes to the inherited IRA, but you could split it if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, since you mentioned 59 and a half, we were talking about leaving the money in the thrift versus moving it someplace else. And I think there are some employees, most employees probably don't understand the fact that when you have money in the TSP or any employer-sponsored savings account, and you leave that company, or in this case the agency, at the age of 55 or later, you can take those distributions directly from the TSP at 55 without that 10% penalty.
Got it.
But if you move it to an IRA, then you get the 59 and a half. Hey, thanks for calling.
My name is Thornton McGowan. I'm calling for my wife, Ashley. She is currently working for Social Security Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, can you take the TSP money out in a lump sum?
You can. That's the simple answer. But Bob's probably going to give you the complicated answer when it comes to taxes.
Okay.
If you say, I want it all. Now, the key is, I want it. So if you take possession of it and they're going to take out
20%
before you even think about getting it.
And that's just a prepayment of your taxes. That doesn't mean that's all that you owe.
Okay, but let's follow on along. And then somebody gets this and says, why are you taking taxes out? And the law is, if you touch the money. Now, you don't have to touch the money. But if you touch the money, they're going to take 20% out. Then you've got a 60-day window in which you've got to get that into another type investment, most likely an IRA, and then you won't pay tax on the other 80%. If you miss that 60-day window, and they're very tough with it, the entire thing blows up.
Okay.
And it's taxable at the state level in most jurisdictions.
Yeah, was she talking about taking it out to spend it or to pay off the mortgage or something like that? Or was she talking about taking it out to
pay
reinvest
off the mortgage?
No,
yeah.
No.
So that's what I thought.
Please,
he was
getting
to. Okay.
I'm going to tell you why, and I'm not about to ask you what your tax bracket is, but let's say your tax bracket at the federal level is 25%, that your income and her income together, please don't even mention whether I'm wrong or right, and you're in a state that maybe has another 5% tax. For every dollar you take out, and if you're going to take it all out, you're not getting.
I'm taking 75% of it cash, and 25% of it goes to Uncle Sam.
Yeah, and that
until
really,
you go to the next, what's the next bracket? 28?
Then it goes to 28, then it goes to 33, and that limits, I think, most people listening to the show and in the booth here, too.
Or couldn't you just take money from your TSP on a monthly basis and pay your mortgage that way and just pay the tax as you receive it?
See, Tammy knows her stuff.
I know, Bob. Finance. I know. Bob was heading to that.
Okay. I would do that if I were you. It's done electronically. It comes out. It goes into your account. Goes back out when the mortgage is paid, so you really are not feeling like you're writing a check, nor are your checking account being depleted because it's being added.
And now, the good news is the balance is still earning interest, hopefully.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Okay, be careful with one thing, though. the longer you've had the mortgage, the less your mortgage is tax deductible because the interest is less each time you pay the principal down, correct?
So, right, that's correct.
All right. The real estate component will never go down. So of your mortgage payment, the tax portion will go down. So in other words, you have an asset coming in. You got a dollar coming in from the thrift that's fully taxable. It might not be totally sheltered by the mortgage, but whether it is or whether it isn't, it's really not good for you to pay all that tax up front to extinguish the mortgage unless you got an awful rate. And if you have an awful rate, you should refinance, which is easy for me to say.
Yeah, well, we're like at 2.75%.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, there is no rush to pay that
that's
off.
That's right. You can leave it all in the G fund and still come out ahead.
Please don't pay it off.
You know, we were thinking about downsizing, so that's where the idea came up. That was one of my crazy ideas.
Oh, then just sell the house.
you are not alone. I get that question an awful lot in class, especially with people that downsize, because the majority of our classes are pre-retirement. Not all, but we do a fair number of mid-career and beginning career. But pre-retirement, they said, I want to downsize, so I want to take a chunk of money out and put it down on the new home. And you go, no. Do the monthly drill we just talked about, and when you sell your house, your current house, hopefully there's enough cash to make the down payment on the new house.
Oh, yeah, that's not even a question. You know, this has been so informative. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you very much. No.
Well, I was going to make a comment on his whole idea of downsizing because we have experienced that personally. And I can tell
we
people.
We is Tammy.
Yeah, we, not you. Yeah, you're still upsized. But we sold our house and we bought a condo that's 1,500 square feet. And there's so many hidden joys of downsizing that I wanted people to know about because, you know, when we get our gas bill, it's like $30. It's like, I never saw a $30 gas bill since about 1980. And then when we go past Home Depot, we keep driving because there's nothing there we need. We don't need plants. We don't need mulch. We don't need paint.
And by the way, Tammy's husband, Brian, is really handy around the house. You could sleep on his lawn.
That's the only downside. Yeah. It's for him because he almost feels like a caged animal because there's nothing to do. So he goes down and cleans the cars on a weekly basis.
I can't imagine that, especially the one. Anyway.
Yeah. But downsizing is pretty sweet. It does free up a lot of cash.
And time.
And time. Yeah, it takes about 2 hours to clean it from top to bottom.
Yeah, and the yard.
No yard.
Oh, no, I mean in your prior home.
Oh, yeah, the yard. We had an acre to cut, Brian had an acre to cut and maintain.
Okay, Tammy, you're going on the road now. Advise people how to keep money in the thrift and drive by Home Depot.
Yeah.
Home Depot won't like that. I guess they're never going to be a sponsor.
But I think that's the thing that some people don't think about when they're planning for retirement, because if they are really truly doing like this caller had said, we're going to downsize, that creates a nice compression of all of your expenses. It's not just the mortgage that goes away. It's your utilities. It could be, you know, you don't need as many TVs, so your cable bill could go down. You know, there's a lot of benefits to that I think are kind of hidden whenever you say downsizing, which helps people retire on a lot less income than what they thought they might need.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nobody's business, but anyway.
I'm an open book.
No. I mean, you downsize, and then you're looking at a state that isn't cold like it is around here.
Right. Yeah, we're kind of doing the two-step downsizing. We bought the condo here because I want to keep working. I don't want to fully retire. But then we're also going to have a second place in Florida, which we're really looking forward to. And then the bills will start coming in again.
Yeah.
But at least we're enjoying it for the time being.
All righty. Hello?
I had a couple of questions.
Good.
One is, my wife and I, we are both federal employees, and one of the things we were looking at, is it beneficial to make the TSP beneficiaries a trust or have it so that each of us is the beneficiary of the other? What are the tax repercussions of something like that?
Let me take the second one first. This was a very unfortunate situation that happened over a year ago. The individual was a Fed and unfortunately passed, named the spouse as the beneficiary, who unfortunately passed not long after that. The two children were the beneficiaries. They had to pay tax on the full amount of the thrift.
But the reason why, you missed the important part there.
Well, that's how I was going to come back.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, what was, and I do this in class, so I say, what was the mistake? And you know, the wise people say, well, getting married. And I go, well, that's not a good answer. It was, the spouse should have never taken it and left it in the thrift, should have put it in an IRA.
Yeah, when you pass away and your spouse gets your money, the TSP automatically puts it into what's called a beneficiary participant account. Now, in the case of this gentleman who's calling, they're both feds. So what they could do is if he inherits his wife TSP or vice versa, they can put it into their own. They don't have to leave it in the participant account. That might be the way to do it.
Okay, but when they go, where is it going?
Well, then it's coming out of their own account, yeah. And the kids can then set up an inherited IRA. But his other question was, should I make the beneficiary my spouse directly, or should I make it our family trust? And is there really a difference? It's still going to be the same difference,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
So if it goes to the family trust that says everything goes to my spouse, it's still going to go to the participant account unless she decides or he decides to roll it into their own.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, are you still on the phone line?
Yeah, he has another question.
I am.
Mm-hmm. Great.
The other one is just a wishful thought.
Thinking.
I am 51, and I do have roughly about 21 years of service with the government and the military combined. And, of course, I am not at that age that I qualify to get the retirement. Can we retire at like any age and take the penalty? Do you think this is a practical course to take?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're under FERS, right, under the Federal Employees Retirement System, because you have 21 years service?
Right, correct.
Yeah, if you were to, you'd be basically resigning at 51 with 21 years. And that 21 years of service, you could still collect the FERS benefit when you reach age 60. So, you know, you just have to wait 11 years to collect it, the same as if you kept working. The only difference is it's going to be less money. So if you were resigning to go work in the private sector, then as long as you contributed to a 401k plan to make up for the fact that you're not accruing additional FERS benefits, that's fine. The only other downside to leaving federal service early is you're going to leave your insurance behind. So a lot of people enjoy the benefit of continuation of federal health benefits and federal employees' life insurance when they collect their retirement. So if you left early, you would give up those benefits, but hopefully attain them either through your spouse, who's a government employee, or through your next career.
Okay.
So, yeah, FERS is a lot more flexible than CSRS. The only thing is your next employer probably won't offer a pension.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the part you have to account for.
All righty.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your answers.
Thanks so much for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We
Bye.
Got one on the runway now.
All right. We got a start movement started. Great.
All righty.
I have a question about something you said earlier. Just want to make sure I got it right. That even after you retire, you can transfer into the TSP from some outside IRA?
I'm not going to say it's a little known like it was a secret. It's been around for a while. It's on a TSP Form 60. You can just Google TSP 60 and out it will pop. Mm-hmm. Make sure you use the most recent version. All right, that's the form. Here's what can go into the TSP from an IRA. It can only be the fully taxable portion of an IRA. Many people would say, well, what's that? I got one IRA that I've contributed to over the years, and maybe years ago it was tax deductible. Maybe it wasn't. More recently, probably it isn't tax deductible if you're late mid-career, early pre-retirement, but you still put the money in. IRS looks at that and says, well, there's a portion of that that's taxable and there's a portion that's not. And they kind of look at it in the reverse and they go, you have to fill out this form every year. You're supposed to. And it says, how much did you put into the TSP this year that you did not get a tax deduction for? That's line one. Line two says, how much have you put in prior to this year that you didn't get a tax deduction for collectively? Now, they're not asking for values. They're asking about the contribution. The third line says add line one and two. Alrighty, so on line three, it will say X dollars has been put into my IRA or IRAs that I've already paid taxes on. The amount over that is the amount that can go into the TSP. Did that make sense?
Yes. In my case, I have one larger IRA that's just a regular one. I have a couple Roth. We have a couple Roth IRAs, but then I know I don't want to transfer those anyhow.
Yeah, okay, Roth IRAs are not allowed.
The Roth IRAs are not even in this discussion.
No, unless it's a Roth 401k rollover, it could.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is just a regular IRA that I rolled over some monies from previous employers.
Oh,
401k,
that would
regular
all be
IRAs. And so I have one. I have an outside IRA account, and then I have my PSP account.
Sounds like you've got a chunk of change in the IRA that came from a prior employer's 401k. That actually can go in, too, now that it's in the IRA. If it wasn't in the IRA and they allowed you to keep it in the 401k, you can move that into the TSP.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that just to simplify their life and to take advantage of the low administrative expense of the thrift. So that's certainly a viable option.
Right. That was exactly my thinking. I'm really worn out trying to chase the stock market. And a while back, I just, you know, have stayed with the yellow funds.
Right. Nothing wrong with the GFC, S&I.
Yeah. And I don't really like having everything divided up, but I have some other reasons for doing that temporarily. And then after I retire, I would like to transfer that outside IRA over to the TSP.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do so.
Yep. That TSP 60 can be used by employees or separated employees, so it doesn't matter. It's the same form. It's called a request for transfer into TSP.
It's very simple. The only hard part about it, the IRA custodian has to agree that it's a fully taxable amount. I don't know how they'll ever know, but that's the toughest part.
And yeah, there's a section that has to be completed by the custodian of the IRA. So you would send this form to your IRA, and then they would fill it out to show the TSP that it qualifies. They have to certify that the funds being transferred are eligible for defined into that type of an account. So that's
up
to them.
I have that with a big brokerage company, but
it's something they routinely do.
But none of the money's originated there.
That's okay.
It's all from previous IRAs, previous 401ks that I had.
That's a very common thing to do. We see that all the time.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. We have another caller. You're next on For Your Benefit. No, I was going to say sports call. Anyway.
My question has to do with the Social Security, and what you were saying before is if you delayed it, you get more money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're part CRS, and part FERS, and the windfall elimination pertains to me.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend the same thing, waiting for longer?
Are you still working, or are you retired?
Retired.
Okay, so you're retired, and you're going to be affected by the windfall provision, which is a modified formula, gives you a little less Social Security, or a lot less, depending on how much it was to begin with. So, yeah, you'd still pick up the delayed credits. It would just be the delayed credits on a smaller amount. So, in other words, if you were due $800 a month, the windfall provision might knock it down to $400, but that $400 would still benefit from the delayed credits. So whether it's a little bit or a lot of money, you still have the same basic proportionate decision to make. It's just, you know, based on a smaller balance.
I see.
The other thing, though, I would add to that, because I know in our own situation with my husband being the federal employee, and he didn't have much Social Security, so he's in the same situation as you are. So I told him, I says, make sure you get enough Social Security, if nothing else, to pay for Medicare. So you can have your Medicare Part B premium deducted from that Social Security benefit, even if it's only a couple $100 a month. So you might want to take it early just so you can use it as a vehicle to pay for Medicare. So if it's not a ton, it's, you know, it's really your choice.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Tammy, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for your call.
Have a good day.
All righty.
Yay, that was fun. We had a run.
We have another? No, we don't have another one.
No, okay. We have 2 minutes left,
right? Yeah, that's right. But we do have 2 minutes left. All righty. This financial literacy, to me, was actually a lot of fun, the 5 or 6 weeks we've been doing it. And I really like today. Last week, for whatever reason, we just didn't get many calls. Today was
Was it raining? Was yeah, today's a sunny day in D.C., so maybe people are happier to talk about their money.
Okay.
Maybe the stock market did well last week. I don't know.
Anyway, so final comments. What do we got, a minute and a half?
Well, just the main thing is just to stay informed and be intelligent about your decisions. Just don't do what your neighbor did. You know, take the time to learn. It's out there.
Yeah, and we can come up with subjects each week, too. And I'd like to say this. If you have a subject that, you know, sometimes it's harder to devote a whole show to it, but email us. Mm-hmm. It's very simple to email us. It's for F-O-R, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit at NITPINC.com. For your benefit at NITPINC.com. And as you can see, we read them and we'll devote a section to whatever you might want to do.
Yep.
Other than that, enjoy the rest of the day, and we'll be back next Monday. Not so sure what we're going to talk about, but I bet we'll get a lot of emails this week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.